You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Over the past few weeks, student-led pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been taking place at multiple universities in the US, with encampments being set up on campus grounds. Protesters are calling on their universities to divest investments supporting Israel, which United Nations experts and humanitarian organizations say is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Videos have shown hundreds of students and faculty members being forcefully arrested, including at Columbia University in New York and the University of Texas at Austin, UT Austin, and students have been threatened with suspension if they do not vacate encampments. I spoke to Senior Lecturer of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland, Dr. Maria Armudian, about the significance of these protests and how the US has responded to student-led protest action historically. Here is that interview. For those who might not know, can you tell our listeners about recent student-led protest action on campuses across the US and what these students are calling for?
Yeah, so this has been happening for quite some time, ever since the Hamas organization first launched its attacks in Israel, and then Israel responded with a massive attack back into Gaza, into hospitals, leveling buildings, killing tens of thousands of people. I think we're up to almost 30,000. I haven't even checked the numbers lately because it's such a huge number for such a small population. A lot of them, most of them, women and children. And it's been such a kind of shock and upset for people who have concerns about proportionality, concerns about life for people who actually had nothing to do with the attack. This includes journalists. It's the highest number of journalists who have been killed in Gaza worldwide. The number in Gaza has been the highest of all journalists killed worldwide this year, and considered the deadliest place. So it's been really quite a cause for students to come out, not just students, but students certainly, and voice their opposition to killing in response to killing. And so it started with peaceful protests. Some of them got a little bit out of hand. Some of them said some things that were anti-Semitic. They're trying to draw a distinction between concepts like anti-Zionism and concepts such as anti-Semitism. That's quite a struggle to draw that distinction for some people who see them as one and the same. Then what happened, of course, is that the Congress called in the presidents of some of the universities to get challenged in front of a committee about their responses to all of this. One university president has already stepped down, and so it's been kind of a very intense period of time at Columbia University, and the president called in the police to try to break up the student protests. So that's kind of the current state of it. But I think it's really important to think about the kind of bigger context, which is, first of all, the United States has a long history of dealing with issues via protest. When you don't have your hands directly on the levers, of power, one way to voice the discontent with the decisions that are being made has been via demonstrations and protests. Hold on just one second. I'm so sorry about that. I can't take this call right now.
That's no problem. I can edit out anything.
Okay, sorry about that. If you think back into the United States, the awful discrimination against African Americans led to the civil rights movement, and it took all kinds of actions and civil disobedience, as well as, you know, lobbying to get any kind of a change for African Americans, and eliminate at least legally the segregation regime, which, you know, wouldn't let black people and white people use, for example, the same bathrooms or the same swimming pool or go to the same schools or universities. And so this, you've got to put that within the context. A similar thing, you know, student uprisings occurred again during Vietnam, the Vietnam War, and the protests against Vietnam. And so it's really the voice of people who don't have power to say, we are unhappy with the decisions that our government is making. So that's kind of the context of it. Throughout American history, and even from the very beginning when it was founded, and then the Bill of Rights came in, it says right there in the First Amendment that the right for people to peaceably protest, to assembly, peaceably assemble, it's the right there in the First Amendment, is granted. It's a right for people to do that. There are some times when they have been restricted over time, right? And some of that has been, you know, whether or not it has become a public safety issue. So that's kind of where, you know, university presidents are starting to come down, like they don't think it's safe anymore. They can't do their normal classes anymore. And there's all this discussion about what is legal and what is not legal and what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And where I fall on that is, you know, universities are supposed to be places where people learn and they exchange ideas. And so there's got to be a way in which people can learn from one another and express their opinions and use this as a teaching moment so that people can actually understand one another. And that could then translate into policy shifts in the government.
What interests do universities in the US, particularly the Ivy Leagues, have in Israel? As one of the main calls from protesters, which you mentioned, is for universities to divest funds from Israel.
Yeah, so this is usually the retirement funds. It's not necessary. It's both the retirement funds and also the funds that then continue to pay for the universities, right? And so these are done normally by investment managers. The university usually appoints people to sit on these investment boards and make decisions. And so there are calls to divest from, not, you know, Israel's investments in Israel, but students have also called to divest in things like fossil fuels, for example, right? So the interests are whether or not those funds that they are invested in, those stock, the whatever other companies that they are invested in, are going to make them money. So because those are the funds that pay for retirement, and those are the funds that continue to fund the university. And so, for example, I know one of the companies that some people have protested against has been like Google. But Google's such a moneymaker for universities, they would take a major hit if they divested from Google. So this is a decision that universities have to make in terms of operations versus these demands that students are making for human rights reasons.
There's been reports that at many of the universities, students are protesting or they have their encampments in designated protest areas, and like you mentioned, there have been bad faith actors who have made anti-Semitic statements, but the majority of students have been engaging in peaceful protests. So if they are in a designated protest area, how has that then become a safety concern, or are we seeing the protests spread outside of those designated areas?
I think it's so different. It's so many different universities, and it's hard to keep track of all of them and what's going on in them. Look, you know, I saw a video yesterday of a police officer demanding that a university professor, you know, move, and she was just standing and watching, right? And they tackled her. So, I mean, all she was doing was observing. So I think that the tensions are so high at the moment, you know, again, it's like students should be allowed to protest. They should be allowed to do so in their designated areas as long as they are doing it in such a way that they are not compromising people's safety. Now, the issue with anti-Semitism, they should not be chanting anti-Semitic remarks. That said, hate speech is actually protected in the United States. And so that cannot be the excuse to clear them off. It's improper and it's not okay, but it's still legal, right? Hate speech is still legal unless it becomes harassment. So it's, you know, I feel like this is, we're going back to a time when student protests were cleared violently historically, you know, and it's something that universities should actually mobilize and create forums, discussion forums, and have people who are on different sides of the conflict in Gaza actually come together peaceably and use this as a teaching moment so that people can try to understand the grievances of each side and the nuances that are going on. And if they can do that on the university campuses, imagine that could be something for the rest of the world to see.
Yeah, what responsibility, you've kind of touched on this, but do you perceive universities having in these mass protests that have resulted in terms of students feeling like the universities aren't listening to them, so they've had to resort to something as drastic as this to be heard?
Yeah, I think that's been a work problem in multiple governments, right? So governments don't always do what powerless people want them to do. And sometimes they do have to resort to this, as you know, if they're not being heard. Does the university have an obligation to hear them? Yeah. Does it have an obligation to do exactly what they call for? No. I mean, they have different missions, right? So universities have to deliver on whatever their mission is in education. But like I said, part of that education could incorporate this moment. And what a moment that they could use, you know, for that teaching right now.
We've seen reports that universities are suspending students. What do you make of this?
Well, it just depends on what they're suspending them for. You know, if somebody did something that really was in violation of a university code, I suppose that is justifiable. Otherwise, it probably isn't.
Yeah, so they're saying that they must vacate their encampments at some of the university or they will be suspended, any of the students there.
I think that sounds, I mean, if they're, again, depending on their encampments and where they are, and if they're in designated areas and if they're not disrupting classes, all of that stuff matters. And so every situation is generally pretty unique. But all that said, you know, it's a harsh penalty, and yet these causes in which people are demonstrating are often punished pretty harshly. If you think about what happened in the civil rights era, where they had dogs sicked onto African Americans, they beat them up and they jailed them, and it shouldn't have happened. And yet sometimes to turn the tide, you know, this is what people end up having to endure. It's such a difficult time. And, you know, it's even hard to talk about, as you can tell. I'm not usually as, you know, fumbly, but it's just such a difficult topic at the moment because there are lives at stake. And, you know, actually, there's probably one last thing I'd want to say, which is that the United States should have a long time ago taken serious action to ensure that both Israel and the people of Palestine are able to live their lives peacefully and with their human rights protected, and you know, create an agreement between them like they did in Northern Ireland. The United States got involved in the Northern Ireland conflict that had been going on for 25 years and played the role of a mediator, as a true mediator. And, you know, it ended the conflict. They got a peace agreement. And they have failed to do this with Israel and Palestine when it could have, again, been a win. That's, I think, the last thing I want to say. Now, it's not just the United States that can do that. Other countries can play mediator. It's just that the United States has an overpowering interest in the region. But other states have been known to play mediator in conflicts, even when they don't. And so, you know, could we do that here in New Zealand? We could, potentially. So it's whether or not somebody has the courage to get themselves into a very complicated conflict and try to help come out with a solution in which both people can live safely, securely, and in peace.
That was Senior Lecturer of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland, Dr. Maria Armudian, discussing the Palestine Solidarity Encampments happening at US universities.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.